Welcome to the TechNori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is sponsored by ActiveCampaign Go Beyond Email Marketing with True Automation by signing up at ActiveCampaign.com/TechNori. Get your first 2 months for free. Today's guest, Mike Anguiano, CEO, founder of Supply Hive. I got 8 million takeaways for this show. It's a long one. It's a good one. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Procurement is a space that most people don't know about. They don't think about. It's not a thing. And yet it controls the largest amount of money spent from business to business across the globe. Procurement is one of the hottest areas in business right now for hiring, for recruiting, because I think we get into it a little bit on the show, but I think that you're going to start to see, just as you start seeing CMOs and C-level marketing coming out of the tech and data side, you're going to start to see the CFO, CEO coming out of procurement because they managed a $1 billion budget. They managed the biggest flow of revenue stream in the business. So it makes logical sense that they would be, they're directly reporting to the CFO from the get-go. It makes sense. Supply Hive, first off, Mike is awesome. The founder has already done this before in the same industry, but, you know, sort of a different spin, a little, you know, less modern tech. Now it's all tech. And I made a couple bets. I don't know if we'll find out. He'll come back on. But what I know is I made a prediction about procurement people. I'm going to find out if it actually works. But to get that, you're going to have to listen to the show. It is a good one, especially if you are in the B2B market. We talk a little bit about fundraising in Chicago and why Chicago versus West Coast. So this is a great interview. My interview with Mike Anguiano, the CEO of Supply Hive. So naturally, I have to give a tip of the cap to my good friend Andy Mack for setting this up. I don't know your experience with Andy, but mine has been years and years and years, and just like a sweet dude. Yeah. So I don't know if you think he's a good guy, or if you're just like dragging him along.
No. Andy's actually dragging us along. So here's what I like about Andy. So first of all, the guy wears a vest every single day.
Yes.
You know this, right? He has the blog called The Daily Vest. Right.
We sat at a Starbucks in Oak Brook in 2013.
Yeah.
And he was putting together Snap Mobile and I was starting my thing and he was wearing a vest then. I've seen him. I have had the luxury of seeing him without the vest.
No, you haven't.
Yeah. He also takes it off to golf.
He does?
I think. Yeah. I mean, okay. He did. He went into Butler and he's like changing and he took the vest off. And immediately underneath he had a shirt with the vest painted on it.
But did?
No. He should. Might as well.
The second time I met him, that was all he was wearing was the vest.
He says he has 100. More than 100. His closet is all
right.
Which I mean, I've never had. Maybe we'll do it on the show. This is us asking questions. I never asked him why.
You never asked him why?
No.
I think he just started wearing it, and then he became known as the guy with the vest.
Yeah.
And then that became
a good
his
look.
Thing. Right. So yeah. So it's a good look. So that's what I know about Andy. And yes, he's like the sweetest guy ever. And little known fact, he's actually an incredible athlete.
Yes, he is.
Right. So
athlete.
We had a bowling party, holiday party. He beat everybody.
Yeah.
In the office, ping pong. He beats everybody.
Ping pong, bowling, basketball, and golf is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you're a golfer, but he's like he shoots under par every time. It's
right. Exactly.
It's stupid.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And what a head of hair.
Oh my God. This is the Andy Mack podcast. You have
really
a hell of a head of hair yourself.
Thank
I'm
you
not
very
gonna,
much. It's a win.
Not gonna I'm not gonna bullshit you. You both make me feel like I got like feathers. So Andy made this introduction because you're in a business. First off, I see you guys' office at TechNexus.
Yeah, we do.
Which I started my first company there. We took TechNori there. Like, I've been a TechNexus guy forever.
Yeah.
What I like about TechNexus is there's companies like Supply Hive.
Yeah.
That you would maybe not know, and you'd be like, oh, what's this? Like RhinoDocs. Like, what is this? I don't even know. And then they become huge because they're like that B2B fabric-y thing where it's like, is this a thing? You're like, procurement? Yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah,
trust me.
I know.
You'll read about it.
Yeah. Well, we were joking around. Like, so TechNexus is, so at one point I was at 1871.
Yeah.
And then, which I think is great. I love 1871.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
Totally different vibe. Yeah. And then one day I went there and somebody said, hey, it looks like somebody's dad is here to pick up one of their kids.
Oh,
right. So they're goofing around with me. Yeah. Right? So I thought it was really funny. So I stayed there for a little while. And then I had a chance to meet Fred Hoke from TechNexus and ITA. And Fred walked me around the place, told me all about it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yep.
And then decided to start going to TechNexus, and I've been there for a couple years now.
Fred is one of the best handshakes I've ever had.
It's a thick handshake.
It's very,
right?
Very
you can crush your
meaty
hands.
Hand.
Yeah.
And it's gentle.
It's gentle,
but you know he's there.
You know he's there. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I've had this handshake each time we come through TechNexus.
He can crush, so every Friday he actually does this trick. He crushes walnuts in the office.
Well, yeah, of course.
With his hands?
Yeah, well,
yeah, it's like a vice.
He has ginormous, like,
he really does. Yeah, he's, yeah, like a bunch of bananas.
This is the show about other people's show. This is our intersection show. No, but it's just, I guess it's just funny to me because, like, we had another, this company reminds me of you for not applicable business-wise. Well, yeah. A little bit, but we had Logigate on last week.
Okay.
And it's another company where, like, I legit, after the show, I thought this before, I was like, the symptoms are right.
Yeah.
After the show, I was like, that's the next fastest growing company in Chicago. That's the next unicorn. Like, legit. It's in cybersecurity. It's a huge hot thing.
Yep.
But it's like not just about that. It's like the way that he went about himself, the way the company was stacked, the quiet, like, confidence was just like, I mean, we just know what we have to do.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of shit that can go wrong. Some stuff will go right, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I just know what I have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I heard about you guys through Andy, and then we were just at TechNexus talking about with Terry about you guys, it was like, all right, this is like one of those companies that's like, this can be a rocket ship.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. So this is my, I'm one of these gluttons for punishment serial entrepreneurs. Yeah. So the space that we're in, this procurement space, it's the most boring space like in the history of the world, right?
Yeah.
They always put these guys in the back of the building, right? They have the gray cubes.
Of course, yeah.
But they control more money at a big corporation than any other thing in the entire place. They're controlling billions of dollars of spend.
Yep.
But to get back there is almost impossible.
Yeah.
So
These are the people that don't get out much.
Right? And all of a sudden it's becoming like this sexy thing because people have figured out, wait a second, this group is spending billions and billions and billions of dollars. If we can deploy them and create innovation out of here and everything else, they can be a really big asset to the business, as opposed to being what they used to be, which is just cost cutters.
I remember in my mind, and my dad comes from a business space that is very B2B. I grew up in this, right?
Okay.
He was in manufacturing, yeah. And it was like mostly like reps and sales routes throughout the country. And I just remember when I first met people in this space, and it's always been procurement, but it's been given different, less technical names over time.
Right.
The one common denominator is I always felt like those were cruise people. Those are the kind of people who like to go on cruises. I don't know why I think this. Do you like there's like a certain, like, they like cut themselves off into their own little area.
Yeah.
They only talk about shit that no one else talks about.
Right, right.
Cruise people.
They're cruise people.
Who the hell would want to have, you know, yeah, I don't
I'm
know.
Gonna, I'm going to run this theory past a few of these guys.
I can tell you. We could talk to Andy. Here's what we got to do. We got to run a campaign.
I agree.
That whoever works with you wins a Disney cruise. They don't go ape shit and buy Supply Hive, then I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to put
I apologize.
I'm going to put a shuffleboard in the office and invite clients just to see what happens. And one of those short mesh robes.
You'll see. You should put like Jet Vacations. You should put like a flyer and just see if they all come in and just sort of gravitate like a magnet.
I know.
I think they will.
I think so. It's very interesting. So you have these two groups. So you have the way it was when I first started in the procurement space, selling technology into it, which is exactly what the cruise guys.
Yeah.
Right. And it was mostly like old white guys.
That's,
you'd walk in and that was just the audience.
Yeah.
And then today, if you look at it, I was just getting a bunch of inbounds, women in procurement.
Yep.
All of a sudden it's become a hot place for women to get promoted up to the highest rank. So you're seeing all these women get promoted here. The women are bringing innovation, new ideas. They're not wedded to the old ways.
They probably, like anything else, they look at this and like,
what have these guys been doing forever? Yeah,
yeah.
Like why? So you're having women come in. You're also having a lot of young people who traditionally may have gone this way or that way, and it's becoming a way to make money. There are bidding wars now for procurement professionals.
I was just going to say, there's a bit of an element of a traitor here.
Yeah.
There's the procurement spot is in the past. I feel like it was a very like long-standing contracts. There was a lot of like, this is the wrong word, but like turnover was slower and the cycles were different. And now we try new things so frequently and we go through new products, new vendors, new everything so frequently.
Yeah,
that like if you're good at like math and you're able to like make predictive models that actually pan out true,
right?
You can be a gigantic asset for a company. And this is not a quote. I mean, this is something you already know. You will start seeing people elevate to the C-level that are coming out of procurement.
Yeah, because they're controlling so much money.
They know exactly how to
They almost always report to the CFO as well.
Yeah.
Oh, so you get access to the CFO, so I'm getting access to all of the money. And then the mindset that you just said, which is all we're really playing off of, which is a long time ago is I'd hire a company and they would be there forever. I just bought you a steak dinner. I took you to a Bulls game. I did whatever. I could I could keep you on forever as long as you liked me, right? And I spend a lot of money on you. Today you have all these young companies that are coming up, and they're mostly young companies that are coming up with incredible ideas, incredible tech, all these things that I can try overnight. And companies, it would have been impossible to do this like 15 years ago. Just it wasn't a startup environment. Today it's completely changed, where these big corporations now, Coca-Cola actually made an announcement, which was really funny. The CEO of Coca-Cola said, we are terrible at innovating. So guess what our new innovation strategy is? Startups. So they started incubating startups into the organization, and that became, they started funding them, and then they started buying them, and then a lot of those brands became brands that you know today.
As irony would have it, I had a call-in show that I did just this morning before you, and it was Young Kim, who's the founder of Coca-Cola's Accelerator.
Really?
Boom.
That's there you go.
It's the world.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in.
Yeah, it's the world we live in. It's great. So all these corporations, like they, even the old school ones, are now starting to come around. I was on a call this morning with Cummins, big engine company out of Columbus, Indiana, right?
And that was a company. So that's that connection is to my dad. So like that's the business line that he was in. Was like Cummins, and he's talking like all of these other Cutler Hammers and like all these crazy old businesses.
Old school company. Yep. They're starting a technology accelerator.
Why not?
Why not? Right, they need
hopefully they're investing in electric a little.
I think that they're investing in some electric, but they're looking for new. Yeah. They're looking for new ideas. They're putting up funding. They're partnering with these companies. They're doing joint development deals, which is great. So there's a mindset shift that didn't exist years ago. That's just making it better for companies like ours to come in.
Sure.
And then I just happen to have the luck that this is not my first company in the space. So I have a lot of relationships.
I wouldn't call that luck, but I'll let you be humble here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
For the sake of the listenership.
Yeah. I guess, think about that. I'm calling myself lucky because I have been in the procurement space. I mean, that alone is odd.
Listen, we swim in very similar circles. The people I know who have the most money are the ones who worked in the ugliest shit you can imagine.
Right.
But they know how to they knew how to play it.
Right.
And that's everything.
Yeah, it's everything. So when I go and I live in Chicago, our office is here.
Yep.
80% of our customer base though is really Midwest and East. We have a few customers on the West Coast, big tech companies. But these big companies that have been around for a very long time that have very sophisticated organizations but old processes, we've just been bringing one of these on after another because they're listening to what people are saying in Silicon Valley and otherwise and saying if we don't disrupt our own models we're going to go away anyway. So you have this kind of point in time where I'm an old school company, bring me new tech and I can try to figure out whether I can fit it in here. So people are open to that, and then if you have a good idea and good proof and good, you know, good product at good prices, then you can generally get in. Again, it's not easy. It's never easy, right? And it could be long sales cycles, but people are more open than they used to be.
This, I mean, I'm telling you, this reminds me of like if you would watch like the old Wild West like movies and shows where there's the person at the general store and there was that like distributor who was like traveling around in the, you know, horse and buggy, had all the goods.
Right.
Each town, the price was just a little different. You know, there's a little extra, some extra beans in that bag.
Yeah.
And it's just, but that's the world we live in. It's a barter. It's the funny thing is like we evolve and change so many ways and yet it's still the same shit.
Yeah. It's still the same. You know, so
you guys just have a different way of making it work.
We have a different way of making it work. So that, so it's so funny. Like I was joking. I go, okay. Yeah. I hear these guys or women, they have all these brilliant ideas. I never know how they come up with them.
Yep.
And so, I was just telling this story the other day to some to our investment group, and they said, hey, so this is your next company in the space, how did you start the first one? So, and they were stunned that this was like how it actually happened. So this was, so I used to work for Grainger, you know Grainger, big old school company, right? Grainger, awesome Chicago based company. And then at one point a long time ago they were launching Grainger.com, so we were going around, we were literally trying to get again, more old white guys. Yeah. There's a theme emerging here, right? Yeah. To take these old...
It's a constant theme in tech, right?
Yeah. To take these big, giant books that they would open up and buy stuff from...
And put it
online. And then call and then just put it online. That's all we did. It was like it was Amazon before Amazon was even really going. So that was my first foray into this whole .com thing. And then I was getting... I was. This is, by the way, totally serious. It's going to sound funny, but I was part. I happened to be half Mexican, so I was part of the diversity committee. This is a true story. The guy who put me on the diversity committee said, "Look, you're the only Hispanic we can find around here that wears a suit to work." That's what he said. He goes, "So will you be on the diversity committee?" And I didn't even know that that was. I go, "Yeah, absolutely." So I jumped on the diversity committee. I'm in my first meeting at Granger, the diversity committee meeting, bunch of people, and it was announced that we lost a contract with the big three automakers because we didn't meet the supplier diversity requirements that were in the contract.
Did they tell them that you were on the committee?
No, they didn't. I wasn't on the committee when this thing happened. So I'm on exactly right. So I'm on the committee, and I go, "All right, I don't even know what this means." So the woman sitting next to me, her name was Olivia Dorsey, awesome woman. She ran supplier diversity for Granger. So she agreed to sit with me and tell me what this whole thing meant. I happened to be at the time getting my MBA at DePaul at night, which I never finished, by the way, because I started this company.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on my MBA, wrote a paper for this class, got a B minus, of course, and then took that paper and started my first company. And then I started it, though, if you look at the crash of the NASDAQ, great timing, right?
Yeah.
Great. I quit the month before the
NASDAQ. Buy high, sell low. I get it. Yeah. That's the best business model.
I'm out there burning through all my cash. I'm trying to build some product. I have no idea what I'm doing, like none. All the money is dried up in the space. But I'm working like a dog at my dining room table trying to build something and having no luck. I'm burning through all my, you know, all my
everything,
cash. Yeah. It was crazy. So about a year and a half in, I actually had a partner at the time. His name is Frank. They called him Skanky Frankie. And they made his wife.
Of course they did.
Yeah, of course they did. They made his wife. His wife made him quit. So here was the thing. I'm going to give you back all my equity, but any of the debt that we've accumulated, you take on. That's all yours.
Yeah.
So like an idiot, I agreed to it. So Frankie goes away. We're still friends.
That's
to this
why
day.
He's Skanky Frankie.
That's why he's Skanky Frankie, right? So his wife was smart. So about a year and a half into it, I was at some local networking event. You know, there are like eight of us there at this point, right? Nobody cared. Remember, this is back in the day. I meet another Hispanic guy named Jerry Paez. He lives in Winnetka. Local investor, quiet investor. He doesn't go to things.
Yeah.
He stays quiet. You have to know somebody to get to know him. So I pitched him on my idea. And as luck turns out, he had just raised $50 million to roll up ethnic advertising agencies. So he knew the space. He was really into it. So he said, I can't give you money out of the fund, but I like the idea. And I like you. You seem energetic. The idea seems good. You seem like you work hard. I'm going to write you a check. So the first check he wrote us was for $250,000. And he wrote the check, but he said, "You have no idea how to run a business."
Yeah.
Obviously. So he goes, "I'm going to write you the check." Obviously, you're an idiot. So I'm going to teach you how to run the business. I'm going to teach you how to put a board together, how to put together financials, how to build a sales organization, how to do all of these things. So the first check that I ever got from somebody, again, just total coincidence, another Hispanic guy, came along with a lot of incredible handholding, I would call it, on how to build a business.
But you were open to it, which I think is the difference.
I was wide open to it because I had no idea what I was doing. What's that?
How old are you then?
I was in my 30s at that point.
Okay, so you had at least been enough professionalism to recognize what you didn't know.
Yeah,
and I was 30-year-olds who were still brash.
And I was happy that the guy took the time to do it.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, honestly, if I didn't have a guy like that around me, and then later on he surrounded us with other guys, the business never would have gotten to where.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you believe in your own story, right?
Everyone eats their own bullshit.
Everyone does.
You never have to at first.
Right.
And then it's like, wait a minute, was I full of shit then or now? I don't really recall.
Right. So as an entrepreneur, you know, you never know if you're like this close to a billion or this close to broke.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like
most of the time it's the latter, but you don't want to know
ladder.
That. Yeah, you don't need to know that.
We got kind of lucky. So Jerry helped us build this business. He put a little bit of money in. As it turns out, we never raised any more money. So ended up having about 350 Fortune 1000 clients. So what we realized was we were okay at tech, but really good at sales.
Yeah.
So we just said if our tech is good enough,
yep,
and we can just dominate the market sales-wise. We were actually the ninth company into the space. There were nine companies ahead of us that started.
Yeah.
By the end of the third year, we had the most market share. We took off. And then we got companies like our clients were like Goldman Sachs, yeah, Dell, Walmart.
People you like to be business
I mean, big,
with.
Yeah, big yeah. companies. We got, so we were in the right place at the right time. And then about several years, I don't know, 7-8 years later, we started getting calls to buy us.
Yep.
And so I hired Wells Fargo. They were our investment bank. And all of a sudden, it was weird. It was the credit reporting agencies like Experian yeah. and Equifax and LexisNexis, not even in our space, that wanted into the
they
space because
the
we
data.
Had accumulated. Like, we basically
want to know who was buying what for
who
what.
Who was buying what for how much
yeah.
and from whom.
Yeah.
I could tell you how much money almost every company in the U.S. was spending with every vendor and every supplier and what the price.
We should have been friends a while
so,
ago.
So, yeah, we had all this data we didn't even know what to do with, right?
Yeah.
So
we well, it was also a different time, right? I mean, it's like you're heading
time.
Into the. The big data is like people saying the future is big data.
Right.
Now we're like past it where it's like if you don't have data, like you don't have shit. Like there is no company. What company?
Exactly right. So the lesson I learned there was if you accumulate proprietary data assets
yeah.
that you theoretically can command a value
you
that's
can't
higher
lose.
Than you can't lose and you have a lot of assets to sell. So we got that business to the point and then we ended up going through the process and then we sold it.
Yep.
So we were lucky enough all these things. All these things are a little bit of luck and timing, yeah. right?
I gave you shit for it the first time because I have this like belief in my head that, and I hate how contrite and like rich old white guy this sounds, but it's like luck to me is opportunity meaning preparation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I at the same exact time as I said, I hate all the people who refuse to admit that there was some luck.
Yeah, there's
so much shit going on at one time.
Yeah.
It couldn't possibly work. Unless a couple of breaks, and like you have to be able to seize it.
Right.
But like, not everything works. And it's like, there's numerous near fatal misses that I've had numerous times.
Yeah.
It's like, it never should have worked.
I see, Jerry Paez, the investor, used to always tell us it's amazing how lucky you get when you work hard.
Yeah.
Right? Which is really true. Just,
it's also because you get like blind, right? You're
kind
of stupid about it.
Exactly,
you're like, well,
right. You don't even know you're supposed to fail, yeah. and you don't. So, but luck has a lot. Like, I could start that exact same business today. And it would never make it.
Yep.
Because what's going on in the world doesn't exist anymore. We were replacing manual processes.
Yep.
And those manual processes don't exist.
Yeah.
Some of it's because of us, right? We got people to go tech.
You're welcome.
So yeah, you couldn't even.
And now I'm selling to you again.
Now I'm selling
the new
you
thing
again.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly right. So that business got acquired, and then I stayed around for a little while. It was really funny. I was there for like a year. They actually said one thing to me. It was really funny. They said, "Okay, you have 350 clients. Most of them know you, right?
Yeah.
We interviewed everybody. You were like the one guy because these were people who knew me when we had nothing.
This is the relationship stuff.
This is what this business is. Yeah, these were friends of
the
mine.
The cruises I mean, you went on.
They were the cruises, exactly right. So I had all these people that were, you know, customers of mine. So they said, just fly around the country and just take everybody to dinner and make sure they don't fire us.
Yeah.
Like, because it's a new ownership.
Great.
So that's all I did for a year. It was fantastic.
Gained 40 pounds.
Gained 40 pounds, flew everywhere. It was great. So I did that for a while. And then all of a sudden, they stopped inviting me to meetings. Right. So
we don't want your opinion, sir. Mike, that's not, we
done.
Sent you out of here for a reason.
We sent you out of here. You got your check. Now get out of here. So at one point we sat down and I said, okay, you guys, it's all in your hands. Take it from here. And then about a year or two goes by, my non-compete ends.
Yep.
So I said, okay, what do I do now? I have three kids. I, you know what I mean?
It's a hell of a 2 years,
of energy.
My friend.
Yeah, a lot going
got
on.
Got three kids, 2 years,
three kids,
a boatload
two
of
years,
cash.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't know about a boatload, but it was at least it was a
enough
nice
to start
exit.
Another one.
Yeah. So what I did was, again, because I don't have many original ideas, I called all of my ex-clients, took them all out, got them all nice and hammered.
Yeah.
Right? We all went out, big dinner drinks. And I said, okay, guys, and women. It was like half and half. We had a lot of female clients. I talk about that a lot. It's a theme in the business that I'll talk about. So I took everybody out and said, I want to come back into the market. I don't want to do what I did before. I want to do something new. I want it to be relatively disruptive. So what does everybody in the room, and these were all senior procurement executives from big companies, big companies like Abbott and Barclays and all these other ones, Accenture, on and on and on. And I said, what do you wish you had that you didn't? And everybody went around the room and gave a different version of the same thing. But the commonality was we spend billions of dollars a year with our suppliers or our vendors, like billions. Yep. Our companies are using machine learning and artificial intelligence and natural language processing to get all of our products to market and communicate to our customers and to become these great businesses. But we're still using spreadsheets. And the guy said, effing spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Right? He goes, we're still using effing spreadsheets to measure the performance.
It's a podcast. You can say it.
Oh, okay. You can? Yeah. Okay.
I've been cursing at you this whole time. Are you even listening to me?
Well, I thought they would delete it out.
No. They're fucking spreadsheets. Now let's go.
Get the fucking spreadsheets, right? So I said, okay. He goes, so here's what I want you to build us. I want you to build us. And he had his phone, right?
Yeah.
And old white guy, gray hair. I love the guy, right? And he holds up his phone. I'm sure it was a Motorola flip phone or something
like
that. Or is
it just a gigantic Max and OtterBox?
It's a bag phone, right? Holds up his phone and he goes, all right, I want you to, he's all serious, right? Yeah. I'm talking about tech. I want you to build me something that's like Yelp for suppliers.
Okay.
And he goes, I want today I send that spreadsheet out to thousands of people. Nobody fills it out. So I want it to be as easy to use as Yelp. And I want to rate the suppliers. I want to ask them a bunch of questions, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, after that, I want your technology to summarize the data for me so that I don't have to read anything. It just creates an executive summary.
Yep.
And then I want it to score the suppliers like a FICO score.
Yeah.
And then I want the robot. He actually called it a robot.
Yeah.
I want the robot. I think he said robot, right? The robot.
I want the robot.
The robot to create an action plan for the supplier based on the feedback that we get. And I want all of that to be automated. I'm like, dude,
that's it.
Are you a fucking, what, like, you know, how are we going to do this? And I go, okay, it's the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but I don't have a lot to do right now.
Yeah.
So I'll go and I'll build it for you. So I'll build you a prototype and we'll roll it out. And if it works, we'll figure out what to do later.
Yep.
So we built it for him. He rolled it out. They had 1,000 reviews that came in that they hadn't, in 10 years, they hadn't had 1,000.
Yeah.
So the first rollout, 1,000 come in, and he calls me up and said, hey, the thing works. And I was like, really? It like works? He goes, yeah, it works. I said, okay. Went to the next company who was in the room, and they started using it. And it worked. And then feedback we started getting was, but can you do this? So my old customers gave me the idea, gave me the entree to run a pilot. I didn't charge anybody. I actually didn't even have a business entity at the time, right? So they just started doing this
running
pilot.
Around.
I'm running around. And then next thing you know, we had 8 or so customers. This is 2 years ago. 8 or so pretty decent-sized customers using the platform. And then when the pilot period ended, we shut it off. Not to be dicks about it.
Just,
we didn't shut it off. Like, that was the agreement.
Yeah.
And people went nuts. No.
You wanted to know the demand.
I want to know the yeah. And
they all, point, everybody says this is great, but will you actually pay me for it?
Yeah. So some people had budget, some people didn't. For those that didn't, we let them stay on if they would sign a multi-year agreement that they had to start paying us over a certain period of time. Now, again, we're playing with models at this point. And sometimes, and we'd raised a little bit of money. I'll talk about that too. But we raised a little bit of money. I figured I would rather have people using it free of charge today to tell us what we should be doing. And if we get it right, we should be, if we're meeting a demand, we should be able to charge.
Yeah.
Again, it's a risky proposition.
But like, it's one of the, but like, do you want to be in this, in your, if you've never done anything before, it's a different, I feel like that's different. If you've been through the process, I would rather find out sooner whether you're willing to pay me the price that I need to you have to pay me for me to scale this. I'd rather just, let's just do this. Let's find out.
Let's
I'd rather drive into it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I move on.
Well, that's exactly what happened. So people started using it. The next thing that happened was big companies like Walmart and Coca-Cola, I mean, huge companies, right? Started calling us and saying, hey, here's our process. Here's our spreadsheet. Can you drop this into your tech? So all these big companies started giving us their IP. Like, they literally just started handing us years of IP with no sign off and saying, can you build this? Well, the technology did almost everything already.
Yeah.
So we simply started converting all of these manual processes over to our technology. And then at that point, I said, okay, guys, I started calling all Jerry, the original investor, some other guys I know that had exits. And I said, why don't we throw a little friends and family money in here? It looks like we're onto something. At this point, I really wasn't sure of two things. One, I wasn't sure what the model really was yet.
Yeah.
Right? I go, I know how to collect and distribute.
But
I know what we're doing. I don't really know how to price it yet.
Yeah.
I don't know product market fit yet. And this was really the honest answer. I wasn't sure whether I wanted to do another startup again.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, these things are hard. Yeah. It would be a lot easier for me to go do something else than another startup. So once
something
I kind of
tells
got
me
my,
that's not like a good fit for you.
Yeah, like a big there. Company?
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's not going to fly well.
I'd get fired very quickly.
Yeah, me too. I'm like first day hire, first day fire.
Yeah, you're out. Yeah. Here's 2 weeks of training. Good luck with that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, I would not last.
Like fingers rattling on the thing here like,
No. It wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
So these guys started training. We started going through it, raised a little friends and family money. Everybody with an exit. And then all of a sudden in 2019... we started charging people. So this is also the thing. Okay, now you're going to go convert these people who are using it free of charge. Yeah. It seems to be pretty sticky. People seem to be using it, but now comes the moment of truth.
Yeah.
I got to ask you for a little cash.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a little nerve-wracking because at that point we had 18 all Fortune 500 customers except for one. One's
fortunately, these guys had spent money with you before, though.
I'm glad you brought that up. So about a third of the 18... big Fortune 500 companies were former customers.
Yeah.
And then, but what started to happen was I started getting what I think were false positives.
Okay.
So my friends started telling me how freaking awesome I was and how awesome the product was. And I go, hang on a second, guys, we're not getting enough negativity here. We're not getting enough people beating us. So let the next few companies, let's go to people we'd have no relationship with.
Yep.
So we started going to people just to get the real feedback. And the feedback was almost all the same as we got. So a third of the 18 were from my original customers, and then the next 12 were not.
Yeah.
So we were trying to test both. So both of them went almost exactly the same. And then about two-thirds of the 18 converted into paid customers in Q4 and Q1, and we're still negotiating with the other six. We're trying to get funding.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we'll get to have a perfect 18 for 18 record. My sense tells me people won't get money or whatever. We'll figure it out then. But the business took off, is starting now to take off. And all of a sudden there's a lot of money pouring into this procurement side of the market.
Yeah.
Timing is good. One of our little competitors, and I say little, less than a $20 million revenue company just got acquired for $540 million from Workday.
Yeah.
And their investors were Salesforce. So there's a lot of eyes on the market now.
Yeah. Well, everyone sees that they control the purse
strings. They see it. We've done it one time before. It doesn't mean you're going to do it again.
No, yeah.
Right. Sure. I see a lot of first-time founders do great.
Yeah.
Right. With no background at all in the space. But we have the background in the space. We have traction. We have big names.
There's a lot of potential here.
So we're still lean. We're running the thing nice and lean. So that's where we are, Chicago based, and we want to stay here too.
I love this story. I love the stories like this. I like the founders like this in general because they're just I don't even know how to describe it. Nothing is an accident, and yet at the same time everything is kind of an accident.
Right.
It's like. I don't know how this happens in a button. It's like the guy I was talking about before with Logicgate. Like, how the fuck do you get in this business? Like, why are you in this business?
Right. Totally.
I don't know.
Totally.
I just ended up there.
Right.
And then what happened next? Well, you know, the first one went well, so I just kept going. It's like a snowball effect. And then, you know, here I am, a $1 billion later.
The other thing that happens too is in these businesses, and this is really hard. I don't know. This maybe can be taught. I don't know. You get these windows of, it's not just windows of opportunities. Things happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes you recognize that, holy shit, if I get that person as a customer, that is going to take me a long way. But you can miss those things.
Yeah. Right?
So if you miss that one woman who becomes your customer, and now the next thing you know, she's the chief procurement officer at a big company, super influential, super powerful.
Yeah.
If you would have missed that opportunity, you may have missed the whole thing.
Yeah. And but people have to see that. It's not as obvious as that.
Right.
You have to, I know this exceptionally well.
Because
this is how we get into all of the businesses and sponsors and advertisers we do. I meet a person, and I give you an example. A first champion for Technori, Laura Ferris Anderson. She's now direct report to Jamie Dimon at Chase. She runs all of Chase's foundation stuff. I could have told you the minute I met her in 2013 that she was a star.
It's amazing.
Knew it
right?
immediately.
Yeah.
It was like, and then it was like not even, I mean, it was, she had nothing to do with me. She was in a meeting just because she wasn't even part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I knew it.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was our champion all through the showcase days. Like
right.
that was it.
Yeah.
You have to have the vision to be able to identify these things, you also have to have the vision to understand that what trajectory means.
Right.
And I think a lot of the, like, there's so many, we talked about this at the start of the show.
Yeah.
It's luck, it's preparation, it's timing. There's so many factors that you have to have to be successful, yeah, unless it's just straight cash luck.
Yeah, in every once, this is what we always talk about at our meeting. Like, all right, guys, every once in a while, a Facebook or a Google or whatever happens.
Yep.
It does. It happens every once in a while.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it doesn't.
Yep.
Most of the time,
in MySpaces,
you're grinding your way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're grinding your way through. You're trying to figure out a way to get out there.
Usually, you're the one that sets it off, and then everyone else piles in and makes a ton of money, and you're
right,
the idiot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to be the first one in.
Well, you can't be that now.
Right.
Because you already did. You already went through and started in the space. So now... Yeah. You have to be successful.
Well, in a weird sort of a way, it's actually more pressure, right? So people go, well, you've done it before, so you should be able to do it again. Well, it's not...
Sell on that, and then forget that comment and go back to work.
Like, exactly right. It's not that easy, right? Just because I've done it again.
Yeah.
The other thing is you have this whole new wave of people who have no idea who I am.
Yeah.
So they go, hey, there's Mike. He's you know, so remember that company that he sold? They go, I don't even know what you're talking about. Right?
It's like not the worst thing.
Sometimes. It's not the... I agree with you. I actually like those people. It's like a fresh approach. And then you're also not like this, and this is going to also sound crazy. Like, a lot of my friends who were my old customers have actually not signed on to my new thing.
Yeah.
And two thirds of the people who have signed on, I had no relationship with before.
Yep.
In a weird sort of way, I'm almost doing better. We're almost doing better with that group.
You are always going to be better, I think, citing past successes to
new people. Exactly.
Like, if I have to go back in, it's like, oh, we've known each other for years, and it's like, oh, fuck, I'm making concessions already.
Right.
Like, this is already a thing.
Right.
Versus, like, new people, it's like, listen, you know, we built this thing 8-9 years ago.
Right.
And it was, we were working for Coca-Cola and Goldman and da-da-da-da. And I know those guys, and if you work in the space, it's a small world, you probably know them too. You can talk to them, they'll vouch for me. But I got a new business, a new plan, a new thing. Some of them work with us, some of them don't. I'd love to work with you. I think this would be really cool. It's a whole new thing.
Yeah.
Like, that pitch is so fresh versus like living on the past. There's like a weird, I don't know.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
So I went to an event last Friday. So a woman, Adela Cepeda, Colombian woman, she started a group for its Hispanic angel investors investing in Hispanic businesses.
Is this local Chicago?
It's a local Chicago.
And she's Manny, like, forgetting his last name, he used to be at 1871.
Oh yeah, yeah, Latinx. I remember. I think it's a different organization.
Okay, yeah.
But this woman's on the board of BMO. Like, she's big time. Like, she's really successful. So the other day, there were like 30 of us there watching pitches from Hispanic businesses coming in. And one of the things that I've always tried to do from the beginning is, so diversity is something I learned later on.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to stack this next round with as many diverse women and minority investors. So I've called every woman I know that is an angel investor, every African American, Hispanic, Asian that I know that's an investor, people that I know.
Have you talked to Samara?
And she was there. She was there on Friday night.
Samara's the shit.
Yeah, she's awesome, right? So she was there.
Put
on Friday
night. Put that
Belinda
Gates money in your
pocket.
That's
exactly right. So there's this new group of investors that that are out there that we're trying to court.
Yep.
Now, I love all the people that are out there already, right? You have some awesome local investors.
We have some good ones.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some new, fresh money and blood here.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to see companies. I don't think they're going to get the valuations that they need to get here. I also think the valuations of the companies that they're going to get out west or east, I think, are ballooned to a point where it makes it really hard for you to be an exit, unless you're going public with this, which you certainly can. I would like to see having that second, that A round be out of here and then come back for a partial B follow on and just pump your value up just a little.
Yeah.
Make these people in Chicago stretch a little.
Yeah. More. Yeah. So what do you think of the venture community here in Chicago generically?
Yeah. I mean, flat out, I think that they make the founders work harder and I like that.
Yep.
I also think that sometimes they don't think big enough.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we miss big hits. I think that this city has two or three more big time companies that the Sitter Cities BeCare.com thing.
Yep.
That if we would have just done it and then we get lost on ourselves and we do this bullshit with Outcome Health and let that happen.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
So like the real business, the real operator business, you were like not going to fund, but you'll bullshit your way. And like, come on.
Yeah, no,
there's a little bit of this like weird whatever. But I think ultimately speaking, Hyde Park Angels is amazing. There's nothing else like it in the country.
Right.
And I think that the access to operators and businesses in this community who can fund businesses and give you smart money is like unlike anything else in the country.
Yeah.
I'd just like to see the checks be one more zero on the C round.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
to
see one me more too. Zero. Me too. I think this is everybody, right? So money, this is going to sound, again, it's almost flipping away, but money is almost, at this point, relatively easy to come by for businesses that have a little traction, a good story or whatever, right? There's a lot of money out there chasing not as many deals as we used to. But when I think about raising money, I'm always... So, like I said, money's all over the place. Right? Yeah. We have current investors. They've all sold companies. They could put up the next three rounds.
The ones in the know how to raise. Raises $40 million every time the wind blows. I'm sorry, Kyle.
Well, what I'm always looking for are, can these investors come in and do more than just write a check? Yeah. How can they help us get to the next level, to the next wave? I don't need more people telling me how awesome and cool we are and how slick our stuff is. Yeah, exactly right. What I'm looking for are people to beat
put
the shit out of
us. Put that shit on Google.
Exactly.
Right? Don't tell me. I know. Google.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for. So you're looking for that kind of thing. So I've met some of those people here in Chicago. I think they're really good.
Yeah.
Right? We have these awesome discussions about what's the go-to-market strategy, where it's this combination of being steeped in reality but also thinking big. So I think we're getting a little bit of that
transition. We do B2B real well.
I agree.
And I think that's a result of the CEOs. You know, every time McDonald's is a new CEO, new fund opens up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You follow what I'm saying here? And I think that's great. I think that's great for the city. I mean, I think you see the guys from Mark Hoppamazian from Hyatt. You look at the guys from Walgreens. It's Granger. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
We do well with that. And I would rather have money from somebody who is one of the investors in a pool of money that I'm going to get a piece of, who's going to say, I'm going to introduce you to Granger and this and John Deere and GE and all the way down the line. Like, why? Because it's in your best interest.
Totally agreed. I was in San Jose and then San Francisco. I'm there relatively often. And one of the VCs, I wasn't even there raising money. It was just a guy I know. We were having a drink. And he said, he goes, you've got to move your company here. You can't be a tech company and be there. And I said, look, man, I said, I don't disagree with you. I get it.
I can get an office
I
and
love
be
it here,
here.
Right?
Get
I can
it?
Be
like,
here.
I don't need to actually build the whole company here.
But California, for what we do, could drop into the ocean.
No one would
and we
know.
Would lose maybe 3% of our potential market share.
Yeah.
Like there's not as much there in what we do in the corporate space, B2B space, I guess, enterprise-wide, as they would like to believe. But I could literally drive through Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota and pick up 100 times more customers than I could ever in California.
Yeah.
So I like being here. I think it gives us
that.
A competitive advantage, actually.
I know. I totally agree. Well, I mean, financially we do.
Yeah.
Per 1,000 employees, it's cheaper than anywhere else on earth to employ and house your team.
Totally
the guy
agree.
You probably talked to in the green room before the show, MB Real Estate, did a whole study on this. It was, I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it was 9% better than second place and 20% better than third place.
Is that right? Yeah.
As far as like per 1,000 employees, the cost to pay them and house them.
Got it.
It's the best.
Hey, let's give a shout out to MB for the sponsorship.
We love MB.
Yeah, MB's, these guys are great.
Congrats to Nate, who got married to my business partner's daughter. So that's
what?
Whole world.
Really? He didn't tell me that.
Well, yeah, he's trying to,
he told
trying
me
to win
he
your business.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't say all the bullshit. This has been a lot of fun. I love where this is going. Like I said to you before, this reminds me of the conversation I had with LogicGate, where I will leave the show and say, this is one of those companies that I think could be one of those fastest growing in Chicago. Like, the city's cutting red tape with you. It's a
if I
thing.
Don't jack it up.
Well, yeah, don't fuck it up. When you do that, you're going to ruin for everybody. But no, this is awesome. I love
thanks,
the story.
Thank you.
Where do people go to follow you guys? I know you guys are pumping out content.
LinkedIn, Supply Hive. Our website is getsupplyhive.com. We're actually just acquired the supplyhive.com name, so we're going to be Supply
Hive.
That's
when you know you've raised
straight
money.
Up. Yeah, thankfully we have that. So follow us there. Follow us on Twitter. We're doing a lot of stuff. And we're basically on a roadshow around the country right now, bringing on clients, doing presentations, meeting lots of people. So a lot of big news. We'll keep you posted on how we're doing. So,
yeah, come back anytime.
Yeah, thank
this
you very
great.
Much. I loved it.
You can follow us on Technori or follow me at Katoon to invest in featured startups or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio from noon to 1 p.m. on Saturday, every Saturday. Go to Technori.com. Boom, that's a wrap.